Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 11:51 p.m., so it's a little late, UK time. And today is November 22nd, and I just finished the I finished the second day of the chart seminar earlier on, and it was a most enjoyable couple of days with a number of subscribers, and I learned a lot about the legal profession. I certainly had the distinct pleasure of spending time with a lady who was one of the first female graduates of Oxford and went on to become a judge in the UK judicial system. And I think it's always inspiring to meet people who overcame adversity in their lives to go on to become in really incredible success stories. And thinking about success stories, I don't think there's a bigger one than Brookfield Asset Management. The company is referred to in referential terms by institutional investors because they're so smart and they've ring-fenced so much of their business from any form of blowback into the wider, or at least the parent fund. But the reality is that it's an interest rate sensitive business. And as interest rates have been rising, the share has been coming down. So it's now easing in the region of the 200-day moving average, but still firm in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this is representative of a large number of chart patterns that we examined at the chart seminar today and yesterday. And it's a difficult one because the price could yet push higher from here, but we're still in an environment where interest rates are rising and continue to rise. We're also going to start to see some blowback into property markets. So, property prices are starting to come down, and they're coming down globally. And we can certainly think about Australia and the UK and Canada as being important markets to monitor because a lot of their mortgages are floating rate, and the number of mortgages that are floating rate has proliferated over the last decade because interest rates were so low for so long. And if we look, for example, at Canada's interest rate, it's gone from about a quarter of 1% at the beginning of this year to 3.75%. So 350 basis points in the space of a year. Then let's just put that in context of the Federal Reserve's action. And they've also raised rates aggressively this year, and they're up to 4%, up from about a quarter of a percent, so 375 basis points. Now, the Canadian dollar has steadied somewhat over the last few weeks with the weakness of, or at least a somewhat weaker US dollar. But the reality here is that interest rates continue to rise. The size of central bank balance sheets is contracting. So they're both engaged in quantitative tightening, and we're also seeing the monetary tightening. And that's starting to put downward pressure on the performance of lots of different assets. But we've still had a good size rally over the last few weeks. So, there's the expectation that this is the end of the, or at least the beginning of the end of the hiking cycle, and that by the time we get to the first quarter of next year, the Federal Reserve will have finished its interest rate hiking and they'll probably wait a while. But there is the other point that needs to be taken into consideration. And it's not something that investors seem to be willing to talk about just yet, but that interest rates have gone up exceptionally fast. So the lag between when they actually start to show up in the economy, is not yet upon us. That it takes time for all of this tightening to show up, but we certainly have inverted yield curves. So we're certainly going to have a recession. Now, let me make sure that I've got the dates in here. if we go back and just look at this over the last 40 years, we haven't had an inversion this deep since Volcker in the early 1980s. When I was doing the Friday audio, a subscriber kindly pointed out that I incorrectly labeled this period as the savings and loan crisis, because it's actually here was the savings and loans crisis in the 1980s. That was another inversion. That was a big issue for banks. The inversion that we had around the end of the 1970s and through into the 80s was the big recession to try and get inflation under control. And of course, inflation was a much bigger problem in the late 1970s than it is today. And I think that really highlights the most important question in the market right now. How determined are central banks to get in control of inflation? And how much pain are they willing to tolerate in order to achieve that goal? We have not yet seen companies shedding workers in significant numbers. We've definitely seen the most interest rate sensitive part of the market experiencing stress because there has been interest rate re a reliance on interest rate in that sector for most of the last decade. But as liquidity conditions start to roll over, then it's likely that the impact will spread. And that would suggest that we have not yet seen the lows in the stock market, but we're certainly getting a rebound right now. And a good part of the reason for it, I suspect, is that institutional investors are desperate for a return. When we've been in a year where the bond market has gone down in a really significant fashion for the first time in decades and is only just beginning to bounce, and the stock market is universally in double-digit declines, well, then you'd have to think that institutional investors are praying that they're going to be able to rescue the year. So we can now see that the Dow Jones Industrials has pretty much closed the closed most of its decline for the year. It's only down 6% now. And Canada's market is only down about 4%, and in US dollar terms, only down about 9%. Earlier this year, it was down double digits, so a lot of the bad news has started to be priced out of the market. Now, because the dollar has been so strong, lots of other international markets are down and down very significantly. One thing that we're certainly seeing right now is that Hong Kong is beginning to unwind the short-term overbought condition. And this is beginning to raise the important question as well. What is China going to do about COVID? If they let it run riot, then we're going to see several hundred thousand deaths. And the chances are that they're unwilling to tolerate that kind of death toll. And it's also worth remembering that the most affected people are those with pre-existing conditions. And diabetes is one of those. And about a quarter of the population in China has some form of diabetes. And we had the first death from COVID in Beijing yesterday. So the Hang Seng is encountering resistance at the lower side of the overhead trading range. And there have been efforts underway to try and support the property market, but we haven't yet seen evidence of demand returning. So that's, I think, an important consideration. Then the Nifty index remains really quite steady and was up in here today, steadying in the region of the all-time high. And I'm going to put that back into the local currency. So steadying in the region of the all-time high. Obviously, India is a volatile market and it is prone to occasional bouts of volatility that can take it back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average and sometimes even below it. Those are almost universally going to be buying opportunities because They have 600 million young people that aspire to the living standards that we basically take for granted, and they are working hard to achieve those goals. So India is steady right now, and it's going to be a buy on the dip for the foreseeable future. Then let's think about a country like Indonesia. It's quite likely that after the earthquake there yesterday, there will be some easier monetary policy. The stock market has been really quite steady. What I find rather interesting right now is that what the kinds of instruments that are doing best are those that are somewhat or almost totally levered to the prospect for reshoring by the USA. So the iShares Mexico ETF has broken on the upside, and that has now broken what was effectively a 7-year downtrend. So it's reasonable to anticipate that Mexico is going to be a big beneficiary of a migration of manufacturing away from China. And so will India. So these are certainly candidates for the potential for them to prosper in the environment of the future, where the dollar is not quite as strong and geopolitical tensions remain taut, and where corporations feel now that they have to act because they just don't have much choice. Then we can also think about the fact that companies like Caterpillar and Deere have rebounded in a really quite emphatic fashion, and that stocks like Rio Tinto and BHP are still really quite steady. Now, this is also very representative of the performance of defensive sectors and right at the end of a big bull market. So I'm reluctant to take this performance as read just yet, because we're not quite at the point where it's a important move, because it's normal to anticipate that these sectors would be among the last to peak. Now, they might eventually recover faster, but it's reasonable that if we're going to be looking at more economic pain, unemployment rising, that demand for these the pieces of kit necessary for infrastructure development are going to fall. Now, they might rise again because of all the demand coming through from things like the Inflation Reduction Act in the USA and the billions in spending that represents, and the significant infrastructure development that's going to come through in Europe. And of course, the infrastructure that India is going to have to build as well. But that's, I think, going to be more of a future story rather than an immediate story. But certainly, the relative strength right now is impressive. And I think I will leave you for the evening, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.